May is National ALS Awareness Month, and today I'm honored to sit down with Jody O'Donnell Ames, founder of Hope Loves Company, to talk about supporting families navigating ALS. Welcome to WonderCast, a community collaborative podcast supporting families navigating the complexities of chronic illness or injury. WonderCast is supported by the generous sponsorship of Texas Oncology. Texas Oncology, more breakthroughs, more victories, experts in cancer care. In this conversation, we explore caregiving, community, advocacy, and the importance of helping children feel seen and supported through their parents' illness. Meet Jody.
Hi, my name is Jody O'Donnell Ames, and I'm the founder of Hope Loves Company.
Perfect. Do you want to share a little bit about you, a little bit about the work you do, or how you came to do this work?
Of course. Yeah. So in 1995, my husband, Kevin Gerard O'Donnell, at the age of 30, received a diagnosis of ALS. And like most families, we didn't know much about ALS other than the fact that Lou Gehrig was affected. And immediately we started to do the research to find out how to make this better. And of course, at the time, there really weren't many resources in place for quality of life, medications. And we've come so far since then. But we rallied with our family. We took on ALS, like all things in our lives, with faith and advocacy and a family and friend effort.
Did you have a lot of family that lived nearby, or were you kind of scattered all over?
We were very fortunate to have a large community of family and friends close by who were willing and able to contribute to daily activities to support Kevin, myself, as well as our daughter, Alina. So that was a huge blessing to be able to ask for assistance. And my mother-in-law, who has since passed as well, Marge O'Donnell, reminded me, which was so important, that when we allow people into this journey, we're also giving them a chance to feel valued and to spend time with us. So it was a great perspective to have.
Yeah, sounds like your mother-in-law was very wise. I feel like we guard that close to us, and I really like that. I will be sharing that with others as well, because I think that's the hardest part, letting others into your heart.
It is. It's, I was always trained to be an independent, strong woman. And it wasn't until 2 hospital visits of living on no sleep and lots of caffeine and no food and trying to be superwoman and care for my husband and my daughter and the house. And I'll still remember birthday cards and make dinners and all of those things that I ended up having low blood sugar and in the hospital. And that's when my mother-in-law said, look, I know you want to do all of this, but it's not humanly possible and people do want to help. So let's look at this a little differently. And that was a wise perspective, as you mentioned.
Yes. Well, with May being National ALS Awareness Month, we are using this entire month to really just elevate all of the incredible support and resources, family stories, everything that is centered around this disease, and really trying to put a face to the people, because it's more than just a disease. It's the families, it's the friends, it's all of these people impacted by this one illness.
Yeah, you know, back then when Kevin was diagnosed, he was really an anomaly.
Yeah.
At that age. And I remember going to a support group, not for ALS, but just in general, and for people who were terminally or chronically ill, for spouses and caregivers. And I was at least 20 years younger than most people in attendance. So I think it's really important. And I thank you for bringing a face to all aspects of this disease, whether it's the person who's facing ALS, living with ALS, those who love that person and who want to provide support, or the children who are also part of that journey. ALS takes a village. The diagnosis takes a village because it brings so much change so quickly to the family unit, from everything from daily activities, you know, how people go to work or not go to work, how chores are done or not done, right? How children get to baseball practice. You know, it means that now there are extra steps to getting the simple things done, from laundry to getting kids to practice to getting homework done to getting dressed, because the person who's battling ALS loses the ability to do the simplest things. That changes the dynamics of the family and how the simplest things can be achieved. It makes it very complicated.
It does. Yeah. You've built this nationwide incredible resource for families. And I would love for you to share about the organization Hope Loves Company. That's what we're highlighting today as well, just because I think it's important for people to know that this organization exists. I would love for you to share a little bit about it and kind of at what point in your journey you were able to start moving in that direction of advocacy.
Well, I appreciate that. So my advocacy has been from the beginning. Kevin and I were on CNN. We advocated for a change in Medicare. We have a congressional record. We've been in commercials. So we advocated immediately. What I didn't recognize until after losing Kevin, you know, as I mentioned, our daughter was 8 when he passed. She was 2.5 when he was diagnosed. And so I recognized as a trained teacher that the impact that ALS was having on our daughter. After Kevin passed, I became the director of communications at Hope Foundation in Philadelphia. And while working there, I met my current husband, Warren Benton Ames, who also lost his wife to ALS at a young age.
Oh my goodness.
With 2 children. So now I'm raising 3 children who all lost a parent to ALS. My intuition told me that there needed to be something more. Even though I was applying my practical teaching experience and knowledge to raising 3 kids who were grieving, I knew that something outside of just what I was doing was needed. So the idea of Hope Loves Company came to me at 3 a.m.
As all good ideas do. Yes.
They really do. It's incredible. And I have to say that my dearest friend Allison said to me when we had our very first camp, Camp HLC, she said, "Jody, as I'm watching this, this whole experience utilizes everything you are, everything you've been through, and all of your skills." So marrying my teaching profession, my speaking ability, my leadership skills, my entrepreneurial vision culminated in Hope Loves Company. And what that is it's a nonprofit that serves the nation by providing free resources to children and young adults who love someone with ALS or have lost someone to ALS. And we provide those resources, starting with Camp HLC in 5 states, which include New Jersey, California, Georgia, Illinois, and this year, Texas, all free of charge. And that camp is a weekend retreat, which brings family together, including the person living with ALS, to enjoy community, to share stories and experiences, to have fun, to appreciate nature and all of the great activities a camp facility offers, while also understanding that we are a unique group who is doing our best, whether we are currently caregiving, providing care for someone who loves someone with ALS, or providing care to someone who's living with ALS or have lost someone. We are all in this very unique community that understands those 3 letters in a powerful and poignant way.
My guest from earlier this month is a family who has ALS diagnosis in their family, and they are coming to the camp in Texas for the first time, and they are just so excited. I'm excited. I'm based out of Texas, but we are a national organization as well. It's just so exciting to see growth and just new opportunities to connect with families and new spaces, and I love that for Hope Loves Company.
Well, thank you so much. Texas is a very big state, and there's a great need. And you know, I just need to share this about small nonprofits. A lot of people call us, and I get the phone calls. They come to my phone, and a lot of people call us and say, "Well, when's the camp coming to, you know, Idaho? When's the camp coming to Tennessee?" And we are a small nonprofit working on a limited budget, and it's hard. It's hard to want to change the world and do all of these things at once when you have a small nonprofit. The intention to make a big impact is always there. It's just, you know, you have to work with the resources you have.
100%. You are speaking to somebody who understands that completely.
Yes, Wonders you and get Worries. It.
Yes, Wonders and Worries is such nonprofit as well. You grow as you're able.
Yes.
And it's exciting that Texas has now been added this year as a resource. I feel like that's growth and that's incredible. If people are listening and maybe they know somebody in their community that is impacted by ALS or they themselves are, how would they go about connecting with Hope Loves Company?
Well, the first thing I say is, because on the average day, I talk to 3 or 4 people, call us. If you call the numbers, I will answer and tell you all that you need to know. You can also go to our website, which is hopelovescompany.org. And I highly recommend that when you're on that website, you look up Together is Better, which is a wonderful 5-minute short video that was produced by Bradley Cooper and PBS from Camp HLC in Massachusetts and New Jersey, combined footage. I think to learn about any nonprofit, right, it's best to go on the website, to talk to the people, right? The people who are involved. And yesterday I got a call from a woman, and I'll just share this because I'm sure you can relate. She wanted information about how to best support her brother, whose wife has ALS. And she called us from North Carolina, and there are no children involved. And I still spent a half hour on the phone helping her. And she said, do you realize and understand that I've called multiple organizations and no one even answered the phone? And that is today's world. So please support these small nonprofits, because she was so grateful.
Yeah, that's devastating, though. That breaks my heart, too, at the same time.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's wonderful that you answered, but gosh, the heartbreak and the frustration and just the isolation that she probably felt trying to just find community.
And, you know, I get it. It's a different world, but I do my best to respond to people within hours, because to me, if they're calling, they're in need. And we know the feeling of needing help and resources and feeling like kind of the desperation of getting on the phone and just, please, someone answer and help me. So yeah, I think there's a lot to be said about the small nonprofit, and I encourage more people to support them.
Absolutely. You kind of alluded to it in the very beginning that since your husband's diagnosis back when it was originally happened, that you've seen a shift in resources and just availability of information for younger families, as this primarily before was more of an older person's diagnosis. And we've seen that shift with ALS, with lung cancer, with colorectal cancer, with other diseases as well. What kind of shift have you seen in the resources that are now and the support systems that are now available for families that maybe weren't when you were originally going through it with your daughter and husband?
So the primary focus, aside from having more drugs in the pipeline, we advocated for Riluzole. Now we have Radicava. There's more research about genetic ALS. So we're making progress there. But I think the pivotal trajectory is living with ALS. And I think Steve Gleason, Brian Wallach, individuals who talked about quality of life while battling ALS, you know, we haven't been able to solve it in over 100 years. So if we can't find a cure right now, while we're working on that, let's really focus on quality of life. And I applaud all of the organizations, you know, your ALS guide, right? They've included resources. We have ALS.community and having a platform for patient-driven. So really taking control of how we live with ALS matters to me. And I'm grateful that I have more resources to share when someone, you know, the example I just gave about the woman who called yesterday. Now I have this litany of websites that I can share, and I'm so grateful for that.
And we will link so many of these on this podcast episode as well to help hopefully guide maybe some of our listeners who might either be impacted directly or be supporting someone who is. So that way they feel like they have those resources as well, because I think it all comes down to awareness. People, they need the phone calls answered so that they can find the resources so that they can know what's available to support them.
Yeah, I'm a writer and my third book is called Hope Givers. And the idea came to me that I have been in some very dark times. And in my lifetime, in 60 years, there have been people who brought hope to me and helped me to get to the next stage, right? The healing process, founding Hope Loves Company, establishing Hope Loves Company, right? These are different people. And the focus of Hope Givers is that during our lifetime, these people come and support us and that hope is a resource. And I think that anyone who's going through difficulty needs Hope Givers, and anyone who gets to a place of peace and healing needs to be a Hope Giver. The ALS community really really needs that because it is still considered a rare disease because it is such a challenge and such a change on a life. And most people, as you mentioned, younger people are being diagnosed and they're in the midst of the best part of their lives, right? They're raising kids. They just got a house. They got the job of their lives. And then they're hit with this diagnosis. And where do you even begin?
Hope is huge. From your experience, what do children and families navigating ALS need the most, but may not always be receiving?
Yeah, I think after working with children in the ALS world since 1995, I think there are several things we really need to be aware of. And the first thing is that children all process things differently. And that depends on their level of understanding, their biological age, their maturational age. And we need to be aware that you could have three kids in your family and the news of ALS, and it's going to look different for each child, knowing that there's not one way things look. The second thing is that while people talk about children being resilient, which is very true, that doesn't mean that we should just ignore their experiences. I think we really need to be tuned in to their behavior, their emotions, their expressions, changes that take place, and maybe perhaps what they're telling us by not telling us. So awareness is huge. As parents, we are their advocates, and recognizing changes in behavior, recognizing what they're saying to us, perhaps without. Sometimes it's just, it could be verbal, it could be nonverbal, right? Just really, truly paying attention. And the third thing is truly listening. I'll give you a great example. If you have your child by him or herself in the car with you and you're transporting them home from school and you say, how was your day? You're going to get fine. If you put a carload of kids and you're carpooling them to the mall, and you sit and listen and don't ask questions, you're going to hear everything that is happening. You're going to know who's dating whom, what outfit they're wearing to the dance, what subjects they're not doing so well in, because they will just, with their peers, start talking. If you just blatantly ask how you're doing, you're not going to get the answer. You have to really be in tune. You have to listen. And you have to have open communications with your children. Let them know that it's safe. You're not going to give a reaction that's not supportive. You don't want them to have any fear of being able to share how they feel.
Absolutely. I love that Hope Loves Company really focuses on the entire family. This camp experience alone, just even that one component of your organization, just creating that space for play. As a child life specialist, I love that there is that focus on building a space for children and families to be able to have this experience that is normalizing the family, providing those opportunities for play, letting the kids be a part of the illness journey in a way that feels like they are also at the center of it, because they are. They are a key part of the family. And I love that there's that focus on the family system.
I appreciate that as well as your insight and what you do. You know, you mentioned the word normalizing. That is what I have spent my life trying to do from the time that I wrote my first book, The Stars That Shine, about based on a real story of, you know, Alina didn't want to be in a parade with her daddy because he was in a wheelchair. And how do you normalize that? Well, you decorate the wheelchair and you do it as a family, and she gets to sit on his lap. And now it's something that's okay to be in a wheelchair, and you get to be a part of life because now you have transportation instead of falling. So we do, as adults, we need to normalize these things so that when we're at a park and a young child comes up and says, "Why is he in a wheelchair?" And you can say, "Well, his legs don't work well." And this keeps him safe and allows him to still participate in life. That's important. And that is how we not only can change the dialogue within a family, but we can change the dialogue within a community.
From your experience, just with that community focus, what do you feel like is maybe some of the most impactful ways that communities, schools, friends, extended family can truly show up for families that are navigating ALS?
It's a great question. I always talk about community support. And first and foremost is recognizing that someone's going through something, right? We have to know that it's happening. When a community recognizes that a family is going through something, the first thing they want to do is say, "How can I be of help?" And when you're that overwhelmed, you have no idea. You have no idea. So my suggestion is always to just help. Then go from there. Just drop off a meal. Don't even say anything. Drop it off. You know, just cut someone's grass. If you see it's long and you know that someone in their home is terminally or chronically ill, just go over and cut the grass. Just take the steps to support, because most people who are going through these kinds of challenges that require such transition and such energy just want someone to solve that problem and not to ask.
And just being the person to see it. I feel like so many of the families that we've spoken with on this platform who are navigating chronic or terminal illnesses, they just want to be seen as a family and seen as somebody who still has joy to come and happiness and hope to come. And they just want to be seen and truly supported. So I love that the message to just help somebody.
You know, the idea is, especially if a family is facing terminal illness, you want quality time as a family. You want to establish memories. That is so valuable. So running errands, cutting the grass, doing someone's laundry, those tasks allow that family to concentrate on what is most important to them. So I was lucky to have that. And I hope that that insight just reminds others that we may not be able to, you know, provide a new van for a family. We may not be able to cure a disease, but we can improve quality of life and what's most valuable, and that's family time.
Absolutely. Jody, your mission centers around living fully and serving with compassion. What gives you hope today?
It's a great question. It's a great question. Well, one of the things that gives me hope is that we have sustained our work since 2012. Most nonprofits don't see that. And so that in itself gives me hope. Every day, I realize just the impact of being able to respond to families and provide resources. That gives me hope. As we spread ALS awareness, just as an example, through this podcast, through my speaking in DC tomorrow, all that we do, my hope is that someone with the means says, "I truly believe what you're doing, and I'm going to help you get to the next level." That is a hope. I see it. I feel it. I know that many nonprofits and people are challenged by today's economy. But I do believe that when you put your heart and soul into something and you've created this space, that eventually the right people will become a part of it and will be able to support its progress in a way that brings hope in a level.
It's the hope for forward growth.
Yes.
And support, which I love. I want to be mindful of our time, and I know that you're traveling today, so you've got a big day ahead of you as well. Is there anything I failed to mention or anything else that you would like to share?
Well, I guess I would highly recommend that those who are listening look at all of our resources on our website. We provide monthly support groups. We send out Hugs of Hope care packages. I speak around the country to spread awareness about ALS and caregiving children. And if you do like what you hear, I highly recommend most people who come to Hope Loves Company do not even know we exist. So please, the one thing I always ask people is to please share our platform with others. Our programs are all free. And just yesterday, I was talking to a woman who reached out maybe 4 months ago with two teens. And what she shared with me yesterday is that they were both so excited about joining our Beyond the Bunk Hangout. And it's been a huge resource. And that is what I live for. That is what brings me hope. And I wish I could just package that up and deliver it to every wealthy person who has the means and say, this is what you can do. Because as a small nonprofit, when you contribute, you make a direct impact. You know, we're not paying tons of people. We have a small staff and our efforts go right back into our programs,
which is so needed and so incredible.
Yes. Yes.
I'm so grateful for your time today.
Thank you, Julie, so much for inviting me to be a guest, for sharing this space with ALS Awareness Month, for the work that you do and the message you share. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for tuning into our podcast today. Please subscribe and continue to check back as our content is ever evolving. For questions or specific content-related requests, please send an email to podcast@wondersandworries.org.